Hello all, and welcome into another episode of the Poach Tavern. I'm your host, as always, Charlotte. Thank you for coming into the tavern today. This week, we're talking to a lovely gentleman by the name of Dino Gel. I'll just get right into the interview so that you don't have to hear me waffle about it, and you can let him speak for himself. Okay, here we go. Okay, well, welcome into the Poetry Tavern, Dino. How's your morning over there? It's 5 p.m. for me, but I figure it's a little bit earlier for you.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging on late in your day. Just past 9 a.m. for me, so I'm pretending to work now and connecting here. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Charlotte.
Yeah, no problem. So why don't we just start? You tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm based out of San Francisco, California. Born and raised here in Northern California, but from about 3 hours north of San Francisco, a town called Chico. Love it out here. California is my place to be, but I have visited England before. It's a spectacular place, but I work in sales tech here in San Francisco. But music and writing, arts in general are where my passions lie. And so it's nice to have that little avenue to focus on either late at night or on the weekends.
So speaking of music, poetry, writing, what started you like exploring these creative avenues?
Creativity wise, like it's always been there since I was young. If it wasn't sports, it was different forms of writing or digging really deep into music and then trying to, you know, write my own lyrics, at a really young age. So it's been there, but I really started tapping into it seriously just in the last 4 or 5 years, in many ways kind of coming back to it. So
yeah. Was there something that sort of inspired that return?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, there's writers that I always looked up to. A couple of the main ones, Richard Brautigan and Charles Bukowski. And I read their short stories and their novels, and I really, really enjoyed those. But poetry was never really something I was into at the time. I was kind of thought like, oh, you know, that type of rhyming, or, you know, thinking it was just that. I was like, I don't know. That's not really up my alley. But once I, you know, exhausted all of the material from those authors, I realized they had poetry too. I was like, well, I guess I want more from these guys. I want to read everything they have. And so I dug into their poetry, and I was, it motivated me to kind of dig into my own thing and say like, hey, I can do some of this. It's not to diminish their work. It's just say like, hey, I think there's a path here where I could experiment a little bit. And that led to a lot of writing over the course of a few years, and eventually saying, hey, I think I kind of have a theme here, put that together. And there was a book eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you've sort of hit the nail on the head of what this podcast is about, because I, as a child, had the perception of poetry is kind of scary. There's a lot of like work that goes into it, and it's all this big complicated language. I mean, my sort of perception of poetry came a lot from like Shakespeare, because that's what I was taught growing up, was like poetry is like Shakespearean sonnets, and that's big and scary and like, oh
yeah, God, absolutely,
that's a lot of work. And then I sort of started looking into it when I was like 16, and I like really fell in love with this idea of like, oh, it is just an expression on a page. It doesn't have to be that controlled. So yeah, it's like really hit the nail on the head of like, this is why I'm doing this, because I want people to see, hey, it's not all Shakespeare. Some of it's like three lines and it doesn't rhyme at all, and the spaces are arbitrary, but it says something. What you said, that you had a theme. What was your theme that you felt that you kept writing about?
You know, it being so simple with it, like, it's really corporate America bashing in a lot of ways. You know, just sort of the frustrations with it, the disillusionment, you know, with your classic 9-to-5 grinding worker, and sort of what a lot of those stresses, anxieties, frustrations, whatever you want to call them, how they can kind of infiltrate your personal life too, whether that's relationships, alcohol, drugs, whatever it ends up being, they all kind of tie together. You know, is work causing the other frustrations in life? Is it causing, you know, the relationships, or is the relationship causing it? But ultimately, it, you know, the frustrations with work kind of found their way onto paper, because it, in a way, it was therapeutic. You start writing about it, and then, you know, after a year or so, you're like, wait a second here, you know, common thread, and start piecing it together. So,
so in a weird way, this thing that was like really frustrating you became an inspiration. Not like, I think the word inspirations often has like positive connotations, but for you, it's like, this is the thing that really frustrates me, and I'm going to like write about it because I don't want to hold that frustration in, like in a weird way.
Yeah, you're right. It's, you know, cathartic in a way, and then there's also, then you kind of get you get a little I guess confidence when you write enough pieces, and you're like, man, I'm sure there's some other people that feel this exact same way, you know, and you know, sure there are, you know, all over the place. And I think one of the cool things too is like work. Any writer, any artist, you know, you kind of have your antenna up, you're picking up things, you're listening to things, and there's source material all around us. But something like work, it's constantly providing material. So it kind of, in some way you're going to work, and you might be frustrated with certain things that are happening in the job, you know, whatever that may be, but like, it's also providing you some material. So once you let that settle, it kind of becomes a little more doable, I guess. Reason with yourself.
Question one, and this two part, I guess, question A. Sure. Do you ever show like the people in your life your poetry?
Not until this book came out in August last year. I like, no way. I kept that on my laptop and my phone, and I was so scared to show anybody even a line, you know, nothing. And so I guess I surprised a lot of people when I just started, hey, by the way, I wrote a book, you know, like, what? Yeah. So it, like, social media was kind of the first bet. You kind of announced, hey, this is something I'm working on. And that was that took a lot, because I've never really liked much social media, and I had to kind of overcome that fear and start sharing some things in the build up to the book release. So
yeah, just to get a little bit hype. I've sort of like moved away from social media. I'm part of the generation that was sort of like, I've had social media since I was a kid, and like in the past year, I'm just like, no, thank you. Doing stuff like this means that I have to get back in and like learn how to market. So yeah, I'm with you 100%. It's a scary world.
Absolutely it is, and good for you for taking breaks on it too, you know.
I know that like I post on Instagram for this, but I only have it on my laptop now, because it was just like, I can't have it on my phone, it can't be there.
Oh man, it sinks its claws, and you're stuck on there sometimes scrolling for much longer than you anticipate.
So second part of my question, was there anyone in your life who like read your poetry book, or like even just like read partial bits of your poetry and were like, interesting, I didn't know this about him at all?
there absolutely were some people, and I think, yeah, that's both friends and family. There's a couple like aspects of that. Like, one, you know, you're revealing a lot about yourself, and then like about kind of your feelings about things, whether that be the work or the relationships, things like that. You know this from an artist's perspective, but it's like not all autobiographical. But sometimes those friends and family, you know, they'll read that and they'll be like, "Are you okay? Is everything?" And that's fair. Those are fair questions, and you appreciate it. But it's like, a lot of this is, some of it is real, some of it is, you know, source material, as I noted, you know, from real experiences, but you know, a lot of it too is just you know, creative writing and drawing from different inspirations. But so yeah, definitely there was friends and family that read certain things and get that, and I think the artist friends definitely saw it through a different lens, and you appreciate that in a different way. You know, some of their follow-up questions differ pretty significantly from some of the family ones.
Absolutely. I used to go to a lot of open mic nights, and it's like such a like welcoming and warm environment. And then I bring my poetry home to my mother, and she's just like, "Okay, should I be concerned?" I absolutely get that. So I was digging around on the internet, as I want to do before an interview, and I was on your website, and I've completely blanked on my question, so I will consult my notes for a moment. I was digging around on your website, and I found something about Gel Studio.
Gel. I know it's spelled.
I'm never sure how to pronounce. What's this all about, Lou?
it's a fair question. Gel Studio Presents. That is a couple things there. When I first started getting somewhat serious about the writing, like 4 or 5 years ago, I said, okay, well, I'm going to pull all my old writing and I'm going to get this all into one, working document. A lot of it was handwritten from many years before. So I was like, hey, get this digital format and then just build upon it. So a working title for this document was The Gel Studio. I don't know where it came from, why I thought that, set, but I was like, I'll change this at some point. But years later, I just kept it as a working title. And then a major influence of mine from San Francisco and the music world and music history is Bill Graham from the famous Fillmore West Auditorium and Fillmore East Auditorium from music from the 60s, based out of San Francisco. He did so much for music and music fans at the time. But on all these classic concert posters, the psychedelic colors and amazing bands that came through San Francisco at the time, it was always Bill Graham Presents at the top, and then the concert poster, he being the promoter. And so I just kind of like the sound of that, Gel Studio Presents, and I ended up using that as a branding for the social media posts I have that come out too. So that's where that stemmed from. So it was just a working title I never thought would stick, and 5 years later I'm still using it.
it's weird what stays when you're like cutting things up and then you're just like, oh no, I never came up with a different thing for that. I guess.
Exactly. And that can happen with song titles, poem titles too. You might have something that you start with and then you're like, I'll come back and change that. And you come back in editing and you're like, I actually like that title. I'm gonna keep that. It works.
Yeah, I had a friend who was writing like a novel. And one of the characters all the way through was named something like Work It Out, because she was just like, I'll come back to it. And then she got to the end and she was like, I just took some letters out of the name. She never told me what the name was, but she was like, I couldn't be asked to just change the full thing. So now character, like, some of the letters from the phrase work it out the whole way through. So
it's that, you know,
I've heard stories such as this one before.
Very nice. Yeah.
Okay, you have brought one of your poems for us today, I believe.
Yeah, I have. So it's from, you know, my first poetry collection that just came out in August of last year. It's called Dreaming of North Beach from Corporate America. Mm-hmm. The poem itself is called Low Serotonin. It is for anyone who's either worked in a startup environment or maybe always wondered what that's like in San Francisco or Silicon Valley. Sort of kind of paints a picture of the day-to-day life in a startup. So it's called Low Serotonin. Tanner was butchering basic guitar chords on the sofa. Brock was hanging from the pull-up bar above the conference room door. I was pretending to work, pelted with Nerf gun darts by Taylor, who was, I guess, doing what people did at startups. Meanwhile, Blake and Todd were locked into a ping pong battle while the Michelin-starred leftovers sat nearby, wasted and on their way out the door, just how I wished to be. The middle managers, over craft brews, were huddled in a conference room across the hall discussing pipeline metrics and sales strategy, all with IPO dreams on the horizon. Madison, the only competent account executive on the team, smashed the stupid gong in the center of the open office and yelled, "I closed another deal." We needed more Madisons, but hired too many Todds, and the company's funding ran out 9 months later. Tanner played on. That's
very cool.
Thanks for letting me share that one.
No, it's all good. I mean, there's obviously some, like, you were talking about real things slipping in, but there's just, from an outside perspective, there does seem to be a little bit of absurdity of, like, all of these things happening at once. Was this sort of like a genuine thing of, like, everything was layered over each other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so yeah, some of it, it's drawn from working at a few different startups, but each of those I have happened in one day before, you know, at any one of these companies. And yeah, it just kind of speaks to sometimes the, I guess, the absurdity of some of this stuff happening in the background when all that's really happening is this is just another company, whether it's a startup, a mid-sized company or a huge company. They run into financial concerns. Layoffs are probably going to happen at some point. You know, but in particular, the tech companies, how they lure, you know, younger employees in by quote unquote perks. When in reality, you still have to just get the job done and you're under the same stress as everybody else is.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. You were talking about your book before, your poetry collection that came out last August. Where is it that people can go and, like, look at that, like, you know, read it? Is it for sale? Yeah. Like,
yeah, it is. And two things, Charlotte, thanks for having me on. It was really cool to see this pop up on the social media, of course. But no, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and your great questions. But yeah, so Dreaming of North Beach from Corporate America, it's available, and there's bookstores in the Bay Area where it's available, but it's also available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. If folks aren't fans of Amazon, which I totally understand, bookshop.org is the better option. You can buy it there through your local bookstore. That way they get money. So it's on Amazon. So again, I appreciate your time and having me on, and look forward to hearing some of your next episodes that come out.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, and that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you guys so much for coming into the tavern today to hear me talk to Dino. I will put all of the links to Dino's website and all of that juicy, important stuff in the show notes for this episode, along with the links to all of our social media for the Poached Tavern itself. So please go and check us out. Please go and check him out. And I will see you next time, where we are talking to Evelyn Crivell. See you then. Bye.